Hello and welcome to This Is Your Journey. This is the Specialist Learning Disability Service podcast, and I would like to just share with you a bit of a reason why we were really keen to do this podcast. So I'm a specialist learning disability nurse, and my role focuses in on mental health for the young people who access our service. I really want to celebrate our service, our team, and the young people, families, and carers that we work with. This podcast enables us a different way in which we can hear from the stories and the journeys of the professionals who deliver the service, but also to hear from the young people, families, and carers about their experiences. I'm really passionate about mental health and know that our young people can struggle with their mental health, and access to services sometimes can be a bit more of a challenge. So hopefully this podcast will tackle some difficult subjects and will help provide some resources and support and advice from people who've accessed our service and from the professionals who support the delivery. I want to welcome to our podcast, first of all, Bev Leach, who is our Queen's Nurse Operational and Joint Clinical Service Lead for our Specialist Learning Disability Service. And she's also our Professional Lead in Learning Disability Nursing in Children and Family Health Devon. Welcome, Bev. Thank you for our first coming on to the first episode. We are just going to have like an informal chat and just be able to learn a bit more about Bev and her role and what brought her into her specialist role. So I'm going to first of all ask Bev, could you share with us how you came into nursing and what led you to specialise in particular in learning disability nursing, please?
Yes, of course. So I was in sixth form and we had to do some placements, some volunteer placements. And my placement was in a local special school in Herefordshire. And so I did some one-to-one work with the young people in the school and absolutely loved it. Had been thinking about going into teaching, but then enjoyed that so much, looked into nursing, and then found the learning disability nurse course, which I had no idea existed at that time. So I started my training actually in Exeter, and then went back to Herefordshire to complete and diversified a little bit in about 4 or 5 years later, and started training as a midwife and did some work in midwifery. But my pull was always back to learning disability nursing, so I came back into nursing. And the specialism, I think, comes from, and I think especially when I was doing the midwifery, is that you realise not everybody knows and has that same knowledge that you have. So when you're working with young people with a learning disability or adults with a learning disability, you naturally have the skills that come out, and actually you think everybody else has those skills. And then when I was working in midwifery for a short time, I realised that not everybody does, and actually that's a really important skill to have, and I just loved it. It changes all the time. There's a different, no day is ever the same, and you get such good feedback, such good, great responses. So yeah, that's what led me in.
Just wondered, when you're saying the important skills working with young people with a learning disability, why do you think it's important, Bev? What is it important to have those skills when you look back and you think you expected, as you said, naturally people and professionals would?
My gut instinct is to say you need to have a sense of humour. And I think that is just about how we work. And you'll often do, like, supporting really difficult, challenging situations. Or involved in things with young people that they're finding tricky, but they'll have different responses. And I think humour helps young people and children to not feel isolated or alone, and you can just share experiences. So I think for me, humour is, and I think most learning disability nurses I meet have got a very unique sense of humour,
yeah,
and work in a very different way. I think one of the other skills is just having patience, having understanding, looking at things holistically. I think that's a great skill that learning disability nurses have, and people that work in that profession, actually, that there isn't a set process. You can't just say, with this problem you do A, B and C. You have to say, actually, we're going to try this, and if this doesn't work, we'll try this, and it has to be different, and you have to be flexible. And you're adapting constantly your communication style, your communication process, and how, just generally how you work. So, and I think that takes patience, it takes understanding. So many other things come into play with that. So yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome.
I was thinking, you also, your title is that you're a Queen's nurse, and I'm just wondering, our listeners may not know what the title is of a Queen nurse. Would you be kind enough just to share with us, and again, what inspired you to become a Queen's nurse, please?
Yeah, certainly. So a Queen's nurse is a community nurse or a health visitor or a midwife, and it's usually someone who can demonstrate a high level of commitment to patient care or leadership. And you have to go through quite a rigorous process to evidence that you can show those skills and show that work throughout your career. And I wanted to do it because there are not many learning disability nurses that have the Queen's Nurse.
Yeah.
And I had a colleague who worked in the community children's nursing services, awarded Queen's Nurse, and nagged me and said, you really need to do this. And actually going through the application, as tough as it was, it just highlights, for want of a better word, and I know you love the word journey.
It highlights that journey.
It highlights what we've done, what we've changed, all the things that we've done through the service. So it was a great thing to do. And I thought when I put the application in, oh, it's in now, and you know, I don't mind either way what happens. But then it became super important. And then when the outcome came and you get this email, and that horrible moment when you're like, oh, is it I was super proud. It's fantastic, and makes you proud to be a nurse.
Absolutely. I was thinking, we've got a student, learning disability and neurodiverse nurse, coming on in one of the episodes, and you were saying that learning disability nurses don't always put themselves forward in the Queen's Nurse role, and that's why you also think it's important. Do you think there's any reason, just in your thoughts, why the learning disability nurses don't always put ourselves forward as a Queen's Nurse?
I think learning disability nurses usually have got their heads down and are just getting on with their roles. And I think that's not to say other nurses don't do the same.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think that's, and they don't often recognise what they bring to a role and the uniqueness that they have. I think it's also the community aspects of learning disability nursing many years ago were based in institutions and based in hospitals. So there was a different form of nursing, and this is very much a community nurse award. And I do think it's about knowledge as well. It's about knowing that award is there, because I must admit, until I had spoken to the colleagues that I knew very little about it.
Very good.
So I'm not sure that it was as well known. I think it's getting there now. We've since got two more learning disability nurses on a team that got awarded it this year, which is fantastic. I think it's knowledge, but I think it's also that confidence to say, actually, I'm doing something and this is what I'm doing, and being really clear with the impact and the value that has.
Definitely. Can you share with everyone, what is our service in, again, through your eyes, how would you describe anyone who's tuning in maybe for the first time, about what is the Specialist Learning Disability Service and what makes it specialist, would you say?
Okay, so the service in informal terms, the service supports children and young people with a moderate to profound learning disability. I'm a part of Child and Family Health Devon. The service, I would say, specialist in because it supports those young people in many elements of their life. So there's not one area that we will necessarily focus on, but we have specialist pathways within the service. So we will work with children and people that are having difficulty with sleep, for example. So sleep can be a major concern, and we know the impact sleep has on health and well-being. We've got a pathway that has a focus on positive behaviour support, which is a framework that supports young people that may present with behaviours that would be of concern and may be distressing. We have a psychological and mental health pathway, which, as you know, you're part of, which will look at the mental health needs and the emotional well-being of our young people. And we also, am I missing one? Oh, the health.
Yeah.
So we also focus on the big thing with nursing, health.
Yeah.
But we will look at the health needs of children and young people. And again, it's about adapting. So each one of those pathways will adapt the delivery of the service offer and look at how we might support that individual. And again, there's no set way, so we have to adapt all the time. So yeah, there's the specialism, I think, comes from not only do we understand and work with children and young people with a learning disability and understand the various approaches and communication needs that might be needed, but we've also got that added expertise in those other areas.
Thinking of that, like, how long have you been in the service? I appreciate we are now CFHD. How long you've been in the team there, please?
Lots and lots of years.
That's fine.
Lots and lots of years. I've sat in my current role probably 15 years with the different organisations that we worked with.
Yeah.
And before that, I was a team lead, and before that, I was a community nurse.
Yeah.
So I've worked within Children's Community Learning Disability Services since 2001. Which makes me sound very old, which I am very old. I was a community nurse, and then, like I say, team lead, and then went into this role. So I've seen the different transitions and the different organisations that we've worked within, but we retained our community team, and enhanced the community team that we've got. So, lots of years.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because you said about adapting and thinking back. I think I started as a learning disability nurse in 2016. And I think that, like you said, the service needs have changed and we've adapted to meet the needs that we hear from the children, young people and families. And I just wondered, how do you see from your experience that the service has changed and to meet, like you said, the children and young people's needs?
I think it's unrecognisable now to how it started. So when I started the role, there was predominantly learning disability nursing in the team. And I think we have one clinical psychologist across Dublin. And with a combination of what the children and young people and families need, but also of what is out as far as recruitment is concerned, we've diversified and we've expanded. So I think there's some areas that we needed to get other professions in. So we expanded the clinical psychology.
Yeah.
Then we've got occupational therapy, speech and language therapy. We've got some fantastic support assistants that are working alongside us. We looked at the mental health nurse role. We looked at link nurse role to support hospital admissions.
Yeah.
And I think it's just the changing face of probably society, but also the services that are out there. So actually what we've ended up being is very specialised in the areas that we work in, but have brought in other professions to enhance our offer, I would say. And the feedback we get from families and young people to inform that is hugely important and gives us an idea of how to shape the service and what's needed, and also to evidence what's needed. So as you know, I can't just go up to my managers and say, actually I needed this profession and that's it. I need to evidence, because it's taxpayers' money that we have, so it's about evidencing what we what we need, why we need it, and what's the outcome going to be for young people.
That leads me into, so Dr. Paula Levett, the clinical principal clinical psychologist, joint leads the clinical service with you. Could you just share, like you were explaining then, a bit more insight into your role about what you do in partnership together? You were explaining then about the evidence, you have to be thoughtful in respect of funds and things. So it sounds like you hear from the ground, us as workers, children, families, what's the need and things, and then how you evidence too.
I think there's two elements. It's looking at the national picture. So there's national drivers always that will change the face of what we're offering. And there's also the localities that we have to look at. Devon's quite a rural community. So you have to look at actually how do we provide the service? How do we provide a service that's accessible to families and young people? So we've got to look at where we want a space. I think the way Paula and I work together, so I'm a nurse by background, Paula's a psychologist by background, so we're coming at it from the same angle but with different training and different experiences throughout the years, and we bounce off each other, and sometimes we have discussions and we disagree, and then we work those out and decide on actually what would be the best outcome. And I think that it's a really healthy relationship, because I don't think to work with someone that absolutely agrees with everything you say is particularly healthy. So we can challenge each other on actually what we feel the service needs, and the different experiences that we've both had. And I think it works really well. Certainly the feedback that we get is that it seems to be appreciated, and people in the team have got a voice. And I think that's super important, is that there's nothing that we introduce to the team that we would insist on happening apart from the obviously the national drivers that have to happen. So I think any change in service delivery or anything we do clinically, it needs a team alongside, and that's super important to both of us. And if we don't have that, we can't deliver, because actually the team have got to believe in what we're doing.
That's brilliant, thank you. I was appreciating you were saying about we've obviously considered different disciplines coming into our service, and again thinking about where the need is. Just thinking about learning disability nursing, we know that Lord Darcy's report in 2024, which was the independent investigation into the NHS, has highlighted there's a decline in learning disability nurses. And I just wondered what you think the impact is for that across like our service and nationally, seeing that decline.
I mean, it goes without saying, I think the impact is huge. Mm-hmm. I don't think people or children and families know they need a learning disability nurse until they have one. And then they usually don't want to let them go. And I think I don't think other professions know that, which is I think why there's been that decline. And then as soon as other professions or children and family work with a learning disability nurse, they understand the value, they understand what they bring. I think what we've tried to do it is diversify in some ways with other posts. I mean, things like occupational therapy, speech language therapy and psychology come with their own expertise and they're standalone. But I think what we've looked at is other roles that could enhance the learning disability nursing offer. And, you know, in some ways it can work, but it's really hard to replace those skills and the expertise that brings. And the passion, I think that's one thing with learning disability nurses. They have this huge passion, which is about advocating for young people. And that's incredible. And when you see it in action, even, you know, I'm looking at it operationally sometimes and thinking, come on, there's other children waiting. We need to move this on. And I just need to do this. I just need to do that. And which is great to see. And I love that part of it. It's just challenging sometimes when you try to manage weights.
Absolutely, no, I totally agree that. I think that passion, like you said, where we can see injustice, where we come alongside families, children, and young people, and like you said, we know that for families and children, young people, learning disability, it does feel like it can be a fight, and like you said, so we come alongside, and it's difficult sometimes
for us to be able sometimes to know when it's right to step out. Like you said, it's a real balance for yourself, because you can always feel that passion, the core of who you are.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, you're having to consider there is a waiting list, there is service, and we have to think about the other needs of other young people too. So it's difficult.
It's balancing.
Yeah. What's your hopes for learning disability nursing? What do you hope for us for the future?
I think in an ideal world, they would increase the training places.
Definitely, I agree.
I think that would be my hope, that they recognise.
Here would be great.
The South West, I think that in the North of England, they have more training places, most definitely. But the South West, they just don't. And I just don't want that area of nursing to disappear, because I think there's been so many ways in even in the media with things that when they haven't had the specialist, and it goes dreadfully wrong. And those reports, the various panorama programs, etc., they show that there is that need for that specialism and that understanding and that compassion. And my hope would be that those skills are recognised and they build on that, as opposed to just let it go into decline and then wish that hadn't happened. Because I think that's what will happen. I think if it just declines, they'll look back and think, oh gosh, in 10 years later, okay, we have this wonderful skill set of nursing, and it all disappeared.
Yeah.
And actually that's what we need. So that would be my hope.
Kind of leads me into thinking again about Lord Darcy's report, and it highlights for people with learning disabilities that they continue to face health inequalities. And I know as a service we continue to strive to challenge and bridge those health inequalities. When you think of us as a service, where do you think that you see that we are addressing and continually raising that actually these health inequalities aren't okay? You mentioned that link nurse role.
Yeah.
So
I think there's ways. I think over the years we've tried to highlight the health inequalities, and we're constantly shouting from the rooftops about the need for the same access for our children and people as other young people. And I think, being completely honest, we know that the world out there is challenging at the moment, and I think funds are tight everywhere. So I think that there's a level of being realistic about what is out there. So what we've looked at doing from CFHD LD service is developing a link nurse post, because for adults with a learning disability, for example, they have something called a liaison nurse based in hospitals that supports hospital admissions and planned admissions. But we don't have that for young people in Devon. So what we developed was a link nurse role that supports planned admissions or planned appointments for young people with things like reasonable adjustments.
Yes.
So if they need to know the room they're going into for a procedure, for example, she will go ahead and take photographs of the room, of the anaesthetist, of all the things that are likely to happen to support that young person. So it's not as scary, so it's not as frightening to go into. And also do things like, so they're first on the list, so they're not waiting. So it's that type of thing that we're constantly looking at.
Yes.
But for our young people, it's also being able to access the same things as other young people of the same age. And I think that's where we come in to advocate, because quite often they're dismissed because maybe their communication needs are different. So actually they can't access the same services, where actually they can with the support.
Absolutely.
So I think for us it's just we're constantly being this fight with health inequality. I don't see that disappearing, I have to be honest. I think we will always have to do that. But support that for families and young people, and obviously adults as they get they get older. But it's looking at, we know that sadly the statistics for adults with a learning disability and premature death, because the health needs are not met in the same way as the rest of the population. So we have to do our bit for children's services to try and work with things like the annual health checks, with hospital passports, to support young people to have an understanding of their own health needs, but also the people that are working around them and supporting them.
And I suppose the Oliver McGowan training is living for, because like you said, when we train as learning disability nurses, we're learning, like you said, about where the communication challenges are, how to adapt. But if you haven't had that exposure or understanding, then when a young person does present, like you said, with behaviours that can be distressing to the nurses or other professions, they don't know how to support and work with that young person, and then that causes those barriers to actually having their health needs met.
Absolutely. And that training, I mean, is incredible for professionals that don't work within learning disability and maybe don't understand. I think it highlights what you can do, and just tiny things sometimes can make such a difference and have such an impact. So the training has been really, really valuable.
I think even, like you said, if you go into a hospital and you haven't been there before and your understanding isn't there, it's really scary when people suddenly are trying to do things to you. So like you said, taking photos, like you said, having the health passport so that families can share that before and go, this is what I need, it's how I communicate, and things like you said, having that discussion, could they be more personalist, so you're not waiting, because we know when we're waiting for any appointment it really can be stressful. So like you said, under the Equality Act, just having some reasonable adjustments can make a real difference.
And I think it also prepares staff, I think,
absolutely,
you know, for staff when they are in the acute sites that may not work with as many young people as we do with a learning disability. I think if we can prepare them to say, actually, if they display behaviours in this way, or if they're acting in this way, it may mean this, and actually that's what's happening for that young person. Because, you know, we assume that everybody knows everything, and they just don't, and that's why there's the various professions, that's why there's learning disability. So I think it's also understanding that our colleagues also need that support, and not that assumption that everybody knows the same, as we do with things.
Thinking back into your nursing, is there a experience or experiences that shape you, that still drive you today in that getting up in the morning, continuing with your role, despite the challenges that, you know, the world does face and in, you know, our work? But is there things that you still go, I can remember some experiences?
Yeah, most definitely. There's various ones, but the one that stands out for me is I was working as a community nurse, and I was based in Tiverton, and I had a young person that I was supporting who was experiencing quite complex behaviours in presentation. We've got a lot of support in for overnight respite, and but sadly his mum was also terminally ill, which added additional pressure, and the family were wanting time together as a family. Sadly, his behaviour came to such a point that we needed to find residential, and because Devon didn't have residential placements for young people under the age of 18 with a learning disability, he was placed in Kent. And it was a really, really hard evening. I had to wait with him in a respite at home, and people came up from Kent who he'd never met before, and he just got in with these people and was taken off to Kent, and he didn't know anybody. And it was distressing and horrid. And I think for me then, it was trying to then, it's constantly setting my mind in just to say, actually, we can't have this. We can't have young people being shipped off in the middle of the night to have a placement out of county. That's not okay. And constantly advocating for those needs for families, because it's not, we don't support just the child, we support the families and try and hold them together. And for that family, when they were already going through such a distressing time, they also had this additional pressure and this additional knowledge that their son was going somewhere that he didn't know. And I was going up and down to Kent probably, I think it was once every 2 weeks, to go and see him, which was part of the role we had to do then. And we eventually did get him back to Devon. But it was not okay. And I think that's what holds me and drives me with this service, is whenever possible, if we can keep families together. And sometimes you can't, and that's a really tough decision that parents sometimes make. But if we can't, then can we have them in Devon, please, so that families can still maintain contact, and for that young person, and that we have that planned transition for that young person, that it's not in the middle of the night in a van with two guys that they don't know. That was awful. That's the one experience that stays with me and drives me with things when they're getting tough, and just keeping families and young people in mind.
And I think that young person's story is still very much alive and still being told, isn't it? By yourself, and that difference that drives through is like, you will never be forgotten, and nor will his mum. It's still there. And actually, like you said, changed your experience and shaped, like you said, everything that you stand for going forward.
Absolutely.
Thinking in the service, how do you, I appreciate that you will have the service achievements and where we have achieved, but for yourself, what do you see when the service achieves and you've gone, we've reached good outcomes, would you say?
I think it's when we know we've got it right. And that can be a whole load of different presentations. You know, as you said, we've got the service outcomes that we have to achieve for the various national drivers, and that's great. That's numbers usually, and that works. And nobody likes people waiting. But for me, it's when we know we've got it right for young people and their families, and that can be a whole variety of things. It can be as small as you know, a young person wanting to do something independently and they manage to do that. It can be that a parent gets a whole night's sleep and they feel refreshed and therefore can enjoy their experience with their child the next day. And it can be bigger things, but it's often the small things that make the difference, and the small things that we celebrate in the service are usually those tiny moments that make up the difference for the quality of life for the family and the young person. So it's hard to quantify with one example, but I think there's lots of examples that we could say, yeah, we've got it right there.
Absolutely. I think even, like, I remember with one family working with, and the child was 11 and it's first time they said mama, and they called and we just cried together. It's like you said, what can feel maybe smaller to other people is so huge. And when you've been part of that journey with a family and young person, it is those small milestones. Like you said, being able to have that extra hour's sleep, or you know, the things that are really important actually that could be easily overlooked, is that we bring it back and go, actually, let's celebrate this. This has made a real difference.
It's huge. I can remember having phone calls, or coming to, in the days of answer machines, coming back to answer machines, seeing messages with the parents saying, he's pooed, he's pooed on the toilet. And then the whole office of
what is like
celebration, because there's something that's been done independently, and it's massive, it's huge, and it brings so much joy. It's the small things, but it's the small things that make a huge difference.
Definitely. I was thinking about when you were talking about children, young people and families' voice, like hearing them. How do you see us, our service, that we bring the families and carers' voice in, and the young person? And why is it important that when we're completing our assessments and we're doing our interventions, that we have, like you said, the family and the young person so involved with it?
I think if we don't have that, we're in danger of whacking labels or doing an assessment and making an assumption of what we think the young person needs or the family needs. I think days gone by, we would often do the assessment with just with parents.
Yeah.
And their needs might be slightly different to the young person's, and I think that's why it's important that we get the young people's voices in there. Because there's examples of like young people with certain behaviours that may not be distressing, but for the parent, they're not seen as the norm, and they want to change it. But actually, for that young person, it's great. They like doing it, not hurting anybody.
Very, very true.
Think that's why it's important we get those children's voices. Sometimes it's time consuming, and I think that's what's often lost in when you look at data and statistics and all the number crunching that happens, that we have to deliver to the national drivers, is the time it can take to get the child's voice.
Absolutely, especially for young people.
Exactly. You might have to go three times before you even go through the door.
Absolutely, yeah you're
so
quite
I think that's important, and things like observation, you know, you can get a lot from observing a young person. So even if their communication isn't verbal, or they don't have a communication aid that is they're able to use at that time, just observing, just seeing actually what's the response to this, if you get that voice, it's just taking that time and that recognition and looking and feeling. So it's the assessment, and it's being part of that family, which is why the things like COVID, it's so difficult for us, because everything went on to Teams, and while that's the case, you check in with parents, you can't do it in the same way with our young people. They really, on the whole, don't just, some were fine with it,
absolutely,
but on the whole, it was really difficult to get that child's voice in a meaningful way.
Absolutely, it's that relationship building with the young person that a screen doesn't, in my opinion, provide in the same way. Like you said, for our young people, there's so many different ways in which they allow you to have that connection with them, but through a screen sometimes can feel a barrier with it. And also considering our families and carers that we work with too, that suddenly shifted from the human connection, that I think is still really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was thinking, when you mentioned COVID, just thinking about, do you have thoughts about what some of the challenges children and young people with a learning disability, you, in just your opinion and experience, face, and for families and carers, just what you think some of the challenges you feel that they face today?
So not in COVID just now.
Or from the impact from COVID too. We know that mental health has really seen an increase from COVID. Or some, like you said, some people found the actual connection or using Teams and things has helped, but we've seen other people, their mental health has struggled, and resources and things have changed too. So just your thoughts.
I think it's a mixture of those things. I think the impact of COVID you just talked about, I think, and the fact that young people couldn't access education in the same way, so that had a huge impact on children and young people that were reliant on routines, for example. That had an impact on families. I think the struggles that families and young people are facing are much the same as every other young person and family in this current climate, with pressure on the NHS, cost of living crisis, all of those things that are out there. But in addition, they also have a young person with these additional needs that may need more support, and sadly that support in the way that it used to be isn't there in the same way. So things like short breaks are not there to support a family that may need, what we've talked about, sleep, for example, and those are nights that's sadly has declined, the availability of that with pressure on services and resources. So I think those are the pressures they face. I think there's a higher demand for specialist education. That's increased considerably. Recruitment is always difficult into those environments, so then that has a knock effect on effect of what's done for those families. And I think just society in a whole is tough at the moment. I think everyone's struggling in their own way, and that's enhanced in some ways for our families and young people. So it's just about being there and supporting whenever we can. And I think listening, I think we underestimate the value of listening sometimes than hearing. You know, we want to solve and we want to, you know, and make it okay. But actually, sometimes the parent or the young person just wants to talk.
Absolutely.
And that's really, really important. But you can't quantify that and measure it.
No, I do remember a parent recently saying to me, there's a difference between a professional who listens and a professional who really listens. Like you said, there is something about, and our world can feel quite busy and demanding, be it our watches that let us know someone's message, to our teams going off, and actually, like you said, being present and hearing someone's story. And that's so important. And my experience, I think, for the children, families and the young people, it's like you said, a space, if you want to share, then we are here to hear you, to hear what you have to say. And it's important and valid what you say. And I think that is a, yeah, like you said, we can't change everything, and we haven't got a magic wand, but we can hear, and we can think about what we have got within our skills and what's available to use to our best.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What's your kind of hopes, aspirations, thinking of the Specialist Learning Disability Service going forward? What would you like to see?
I think more of the same. I think we never stopped another thing, and I'm super proud of that as a service, that we are constantly changing our delivery, even just by tweaks, by what the feedback that we get from founders and young people and other professionals. So I think it would be for us to continue as we are, but better. So I don't think we're ever in a place where we say this is us and we're amazing, because actually there's so many other things that we can do. There's so many other things we can change.
Yeah.
And more evidence comes out, more research comes out.
Yeah.
And we have to keep evolving and moving with that. And the pressures of families and young people change.
Yes.
And I think we're very much influenced by that and what we can deliver to support that. So I think more of the same, but let's keep going and let's keep improving and let's keep changing and adapting to those needs.
And which is what you said at the heart of learning disability nursing right from the beginning when we first started talking, was you said the ability to adapt.
Yeah.
And that's something, like you said, we need to keep hearing, keep seeing, keep adapting, keep changing, keep learning.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I've just got a few questions before we finish the first episode. So I just wondered, Beth, what would you like carers and parents to hear from you today who will be accessing our service in the future? What would your words be to them? And also, just if I could ask those who have accessed our service, just those two parts for our future and those who've accessed before, what would your message be to them?
I think for the parents that haven't accessed us or professionals to reach out, to talk to us, we may not be the right service to support, but if we're not, we will support you to find a service that may. And if there are gaps, if there are things that are not being provided that you think would be helpful, again, let us know. We're always developing. We're always looking at ways of how we work. And that's very much influenced by the people we support. We can only deliver to that standard if we're aware of what's needed. So I would say be open with us and talk to us. And they're, you know, a super friendly bunch. That's the one thing I would put out there, is the team are, as well as being passionate and determined in their personalities, they're also super supportive and friendly, and that's always worth a conversation and to reach out and do that.
You said when we did look at me, this obviously is a absolutely final polished version of this podcast. When we met before doing our pre-run, you mentioned about well-being for parents and carers, and you were thoughtful of that and the term well-being. But I was thinking when you said about children and young people, and actually like you said, their behaviours can be difficult for parents and carers, and you, when we first ran through, you also talked about parents and carers thinking of themselves, which can be really difficult when you are looking after a child with a learning disability. It can be present some challenges, and I just wondered, we don't want to put well-being on to anyone with a pressure, but just, I suppose, I was thinking when you talked about the importance of ourselves to just where you can, thinking of yourself too.
It is looking after yourself, and I think parents generally don't put themselves first. And I think parents who are also advocating for children, yes, definitely don't, yeah, put themselves first. So my plea would be to wherever you can, yeah, to look after yourselves. And that might be, like you talked about, the extra hour of sleep, or just a walk, or just, yeah, any of those things that might give you that space and time, yeah, to just, you know, be you, really.
Yeah, same energy. Yeah. So much, like you said, when you're advocating and having, and some of our parents and carers families who work with me have their own needs too, so they're already having their challenges. Like you said, it's trying to find, just to remember you are important too,
yeah,
in this journey. What about for our children and young people who've accessed the service, they've passed and are coming forward? What would you like your message to be to them?
I want to say the words that my granddaughter said to me last week, which was, you do you.
That's awesome.
which was incredible. And I think that's it. It's just be you, and we'll help you, we'll support you. And if there's things that you want to work on, we'll help in any way we can. But yeah, just be you.
I think when we did our pre-run, you said don't change. No. That was a big message for yourself, was like,
you don't need to.
Yeah,
change. You don't need to fit, yeah, into anybody else's world. You, yeah, don't need to make the world work for you.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's awesome. And like you said, just closing, thinking about professionals, because you're right, I feel sometimes guilty. I can assume that other professionals will have that experience, knowledge, working with people with learning disability. And you're right, not everyone does. So just think of any of our professionals, colleagues who are out there who may be listening to our podcast, what advice would you give to them if they get the privilege, in my mind, of working with someone with a learning disability or someone who's accessing our service? How would you say your advice would be for them in that first meeting?
I would say just work alongside us, and we don't expect everyone to know everything. And I think that's some of the barriers that we may come across, is that professionals are slightly hesitant about the work because they may not feel confident.
Yeah.
And actually, if they come alongside us and work with us, we'll always support that.
Yeah.
I won't say journey again, because that's,
you say journey as many times as you want. This is your journey.
we will support. We don't. If you came to us and said, you know, I don't understand this presentation, I'm not sure how to work, well, that's what we're there for. We'll enhance that. We'll support that. But yeah, just tell us, and we can work with you.
You think that's something, like, if a is being able to say, like you said, without judgment, I'm not sure how to. If we start raising it and go, I may not feel confident, but I want to learn, yeah, and I want to be able to know more about this young person who's come through, and asking the family and care, and asking the young person to, like you said, how do they communicate? What do you need from me?
Yeah.
It just starts to break it down, and then maybe we start reducing those health inequalities again.
Completely. And I think also quite often when professionals come together, it's usually because there's a time in that person's, young person's life that is really challenging, or they're in crisis. So everybody then is a little bit panicky and a little bit like, oh my goodness, what do we need to do to support? But actually, if we could all take a step back and say, okay, you're going to do this, we'll do this, and it's all quite measured and planned, it can have better outcomes for young people.
That's what we want.
And that's what we want. But it's when we're all spiralling, trying desperately to get it right, and that's the moment when we should say, I'm not really sure of this bit, but if you can do this bit, we'll get there.
Thank you, Bear. Is there anything else you'd like to say, or do you feel you have said so much?
I think I've said
so much. Bear, thank you so much for coming on This Is Your Journey. We thoroughly enjoyed having you. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.